Hello and welcome to another episode of the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Doc Eel, and today our guest is John Ireland, Lakers play-by-play announcer and one half of the Mason and Ireland ESPN radio show. We talk about tanking, we talk about the NBA rest problem, we get into the Clippers, the Lakers, and John gives us a great Donald Sterling story. So, you ready to tip it off? John, how you doing?
I'm good, Mo. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. I really just like to jump right into it, and you've talked about it last week on your show, and you had an interesting proposal, but how would you go about fixing tanking? Because it's a definite problem in the NBA right now.
Well, there's a couple of things out there in the NBA. The tanking and the resting are the two things that seem to come up more than anything else. And there are several things that the league could do about it. You know, I have kind of a unique view of it, Mo, this year, because I'm the world's biggest Laker fan. I grew up a Laker fan. Now I work for them, and I've my entire life hate tanking. I just think that it's not in the spirit of what any game is intended to do, is that you play a game with the intent to lose it. And, it just doesn't sit well with me. I've never liked it. But having said that, I'm in a situation this year with the Lakers where I can't make an argument, even as a gigantic Laker apologist, where it would be a good thing if we were to go on a winning streak. I think most of your listeners probably know, but if the Lakers pick this year is top three protected, which means if they finish after the ping pong ball lottery, if they finish 1, 2, or 3, they get to keep their pick, and 4 or higher, they lose it. So it incentivizes the Lakers to lose as many games as possible to give them the most ping pong balls to stay in that top three. But this year, there's even a twist to it. As you probably know, the league has a rule that you can't trade number one picks 2 years in a row. So we traded our 2017 number one pick to Phoenix. They in turn traded it to Philadelphia. So Philadelphia owns our pick next summer or this summer. And it's top three protected. So if we were to lose that pick, and it goes to Philadelphia, our 2019 pick has already been traded to Orlando in the Dwight Howard trade. And then the Magic get our 2019 number one. So we're trying to protect two number one picks. Now, if we hang on to our pick, let's say we finish bottom three. Next year, Phoenix automatically, that Phoenix pick, which has been traded to Philadelphia, automatically kicks in. So Philadelphia gets our 2018 pick, number one. And the 2019, which I just told you about, converts to two number twos in Orlando, because they had to build it that way because you can't trade two number ones in a row. So that's a very long way of telling you the Lakers need to lose to protect two number one picks. And it's put one of the premier franchises in the NBA, one of the most popular teams, nationwide and around the world, the Lakers, in a position where our two highest paid players are inactive every night. Timofey Mozgov and Lou Deng have been benched for the rest of the season. And the reason they have is we've got to play young guys, and we've got to hope that they play like young guys and that we lose. And if we lose, we get a better chance of protecting those picks. So I know that's a long, rambling way of explaining that not even a guy like me can make the argument that it would be better if we win. The league has created a system in which we need to lose games, and not even guys like me can argue it. And now, so you get into that and you say, okay, so what could we do to avoid this happening in the future? And the first thing I would do is I would take away the protections. Mo, if you're the Clippers and I'm the Lakers,
right,
and I trade you my number one pick, you get that number one pick with no conditions attached. There would be no such thing as top three protected. There would be no such thing that there would be no reason for me to tank. Like, for example, New Jersey, who is now Brooklyn, but back when they were New Jersey, they loaded up on veteran players trying to win a title. They traded for Garnett and Pierce. And so their pick goes to Boston this year. Brooklyn's pick goes to Boston this year, but there's no conditions on it. So it doesn't, you know, it gives New Jersey, or Brooklyn rather, no incentive to lose. They're losing anyway because they stink. But
right.
It gives them no incentive to lose because it won't make any difference. Their pick is going to Boston. I'm saying this as a Laker fan. I'm lucky that our pick is top three protected. But in my perfect world, those protections would be gone. And the way you could execute it is you could say, hey, any trade that's already been made that has protections attached, that gets grandfathered in. So you wouldn't renege on any existing deals that have already been made. But from this point forward, the first thing I would do if I was Adam Silver was I would say no more protections on picks. You can trade your first round pick if you want, but if you do, it's gone. So in other words, if I trade it to you, you get it. And there's no worrying about where I finish in the standings, where you finish in the standings. There's no conditions attached. That's the very first thing I would do. Does that make sense?
I absolutely love it. And it's actually part of my little proposal on the back end of it. But
All right, well, let me tell you the other idea I have, and you can tell me if I'm crazy. But you know that NBA fans are NBA fans. They'll watch their team even if their team's having a bad year. You want to watch the young guys. We signed a guy today, David Nwaba. You and I are taping this on a Tuesday. We signed Nwaba, and he's a guy we pulled up off our D-League team. And a lot of people are excited about him because it looks like he can play and he can be a contributor on the NBA level. So people will tune in to watch guys like that.
I'm a big fan of his. I actually wrote about him, John. I'm a big fan of his.
Okay. So you know, it's guys like that that you're kind of keeping an eye on. But so my other idea, and this is a little more radical, is, and none of these ideas are exclusively mine, Mo. I've kind of stolen from all my friends and anyone who writes to me, but this is one that made a lot of sense. I think it would be fun if you finish in spots 9 through 14, you just stay where you are. So if you're a team that almost got a playoff spot, but you came up just short, you know exactly where you're picking last year. 9 through 14 gets based on record. But 1 through 8, you have a lottery tournament. And what you do is, for example, and the game would be played in the team city with the worst record. So the number 1 team, which this year would be Brooklyn, would get a home game against the number 8 team, you know, which would be somebody, you know, like Minnesota or Chicago. And they would have to come into Brooklyn and play. These are 1-game elimination tournaments, like the NCAA tournament. You come in and you play it. It gives an extra game to the radio and TV partners of the two teams. I'm sure ESPN or TNT might even pick it up. And you basically have an 8-team tournament to see who gets the number 1 pick. And it would give teams and some people might say, well, why would the players on the team try hard if they know that they might not have a spot next year because they're getting a good player? You pay them. You give them money. So you say, like, if you get out of the first round, each player gets $200,000. You get out of the second round, you get $400,000. And you get out of the third round, each player gets $1 million. And the tournament would pay for itself. I think all of the fans of the bad teams, the bad 8 teams, would watch this because it would determine who you get to pick the next year. The players would try hard because they're getting paid. And I think it provides content for NBA fans. What do you think of that idea?
So there's a couple of issues I have with it. For starters, like in this current situation, like I don't know if the Nets would even bother wanting to play, seeing that they don't even benefit from the pick because their pick had been traded. So it'd be Boston's pick. I think the other thing that kind of worries me is if I'm a free agent, and although there's a lot of money at stake if you win it all, I mean, the way you've kind of lined it up, it's about 1.6
million.
Yeah, you
could win close to $2 million.
Something like that. And it's pretty impressive, and it's for sure interesting. But at the same time, it's like it's another injury risk, right? If you tear your ACL in that game, you're probably out next year. Coaches who... I'm sorry, what were you going
to
say?
But wait, couldn't we apply the same argument to the first round of a regular playoff series?
But again, at least it's...
You're not going to sit out a regular playoff series because you're scared of tearing your ACL. You could tear your ACL in practice. I mean, you know this because you've been around a lot of practices. I mean, you can't protect against sports injury. It could happen anytime.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But I feel like it's, at least in the playoffs, it's the playoffs. Like, you go play. And
And the truth of the matter is, because we've seen it with a number of guys who, if they have a great playoff run, they're going to get overpaid come free agency, you know, and then they may never, we may never hear from them again, kind of thing. So there's a little bit more interest in that side of it. I also think some of these teams have, you know, the team's ready to fire their coach, the whole situation, and that dynamic. I think it just adds a very difficult kind of, like, you got to get a lot of people to go follow along. Now, I agree with you. The fans will watch. Like, I'll tune in and watch these games, you know, because there's a lot at stake. That number one pick's going to be definitely up there. So what would you do with, if a team traded their pick, like Boston in this situation? If we had this going this year, you know, is Brooklyn going to play for Boston?
Yeah, but here's how you make it work. Brooklyn plays for Boston, but you also give them a first-round pick. In other words, they didn't have one before, but they can play their way into a first-round pick. So that gives them incentive to play hard. In other words, so there's 30 teams in the league. You would just add a 31st pick to the round and give Brooklyn a first-round pick that they didn't have before. So in other words, they would get, I don't know if they still have their number two, but they would have the 31st and the 32nd pick, which completely changes their draft.
I like that.
And that goes in. Okay, so I've got one more crazy idea to stop tanking.
Okay.
And this is an idea that has been written about a lot. I don't know if you've read up on it. It was written up on Grantland when that website existed. It's been actually kicked around at the NBA ownership level, proposed and voted down. Do you know what the wheel is?
Yeah, I am familiar with the wheel, but for my listeners who may not be, can you break it down?
Yeah, okay, I'll give you the short version of the wheel. The wheel is that we would know, starting next year, where every team was picking for the next 30 years in the first round. So if you're the Lakers, for example, and you would start it with, the Lakers would get good picks for the next 2 or 3 years. They would have top 10 picks, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years, but it's not going to make a huge difference because eventually over the next 30 years, they're going to pick in all 30 spots. So, you know, next year we might pick second. The year after that, we might pick ninth. The year after that, we might pick seventh. Eventually we're going to check the box of every number. So every team has the exact same opportunity to get the same picks over the next 30 years. Obviously we don't know who the number one pick in 30 years is going to be. He hasn't been born yet.
Right.
But we know that that there would be equity for all 30 teams in the league because you're eventually going to pick in one of the 30 spots every year for the next 30 years, unless you trade your pick. You can still trade your pick, but you would know exactly what number pick you would be trading. So, for example, if you go back to our Laker-Clipper analogy, I'm the Lakers, you're the Clippers, we make a pick. And you know that in 3 years, I have the number two pick. I can say, okay, I can give you my 2020 number two pick if you give me Blake Griffin. And, you know, it'd be part of a bigger deal, obviously.
Right, right.
It would clarify some things. It would obviously be more precise because you know exactly where you were picking. And it would discourage teams from tanking because your record – each individual season would be irrelevant. You don't need to know what my record is because I know if I'm Brooklyn, I know next year, let's say I'm picking 13th. It doesn't matter if I win or lose. There's no incentive to tank. Did I explain it properly? Does that make sense?
No, that's exactly it. I mean, I think that's the best way. You explained it great. Anybody who doesn't understand it, they can go read up on it. But that's about...
Yeah, just Google NBA lottery wheel and a bunch of articles that will go into much greater detail than you and I have gone into will explain it.
Yeah, my only concern with that, and I think Mace brought it up on your show when you guys had talked about it. I believe it was Mace. And I think it was... it's going to be interesting because you're going to have guys sit out the draft, like go to college for an extra year, which may not necessarily be a bad thing, but you might have this year like a Lonzo Ball looks, and let's assume it's Memphis's has the first pick in the draft, and, you know, he doesn't want to go there. LaVar Ball doesn't feel comfortable with his son going to Memphis. You know, he stays at UCLA an extra year. Like, it adds an
interesting
wrinkle
there. Okay, but let me comment on two aspects of that. Number one, if Lonzo Ball did that, all right, he's costing himself millions of dollars. You know, he's not being paid. So if he's willing to do that, and I don't think a lot of kids would be, but if he's willing to cost himself $2 or $3 million to go to school for another year, then that's on him. Secondly, and you referenced it, when did going to school for another year for any of these guys turn into a bad thing? You know, the number one complaint of NBA guys is we have to draft these guys too young. These one and done guys are too young. If the GMs in the league had a vote, Mo, they would vote to change that rule to make sure kids have to stay in school 2 years. This would be just another vehicle for them to do that. So, it seems to me that in both those cases, there would be some built-in deterrence. Let me tell you one that I'm playing devil's advocate now against my own wheel. But one of the reasons it got voted down was you need 2/3 of the league. You need, basically you need 22 votes to get anything passed. And Sam Presti, the GM in Oklahoma City, was able to rally more than 8 votes to kill the wheel. And here's Sam's logic. He felt like, and I see his point, that small market teams are at a disadvantage with free agency already. No free agents are lining up to go to Milwaukee, Oklahoma City, Orlando, Charlotte. You know, the free agents, elite players, are going to the major cities. They're going to LA, New York, San Francisco, you know, those types of destinations. So those franchises in the major cities have an inherent advantage when it comes to, like, you know, there's a bunch of different ways. If you and I were both GMs, there's a bunch of different ways we can get players. We can draft them. We can get them through free agency. We can make trades. Big markets already have an advantage over small markets in that free agents want to go there. Free agents want to go to Miami. They don't necessarily want to go to Oklahoma City. So if you then come up with an even system, which is what the wheel is, where there is no distinction made between a team with a good record and a team with a bad record, then teams with bad records in small markets would have a very difficult time climbing out of that hole. And I see Sam's point, but the question you asked me originally was, how do we stop tanking? And tanking would stop immediately with the wheel. So we would have to then cross the bridge to address the small market issue. But if we're trying to get an answer to how do we stop tanking, the wheel stops it literally overnight. There is no reason to tank anymore if there's a wheel. So there's other problems that come with it. We might be robbing Peter to pay Paul here, but the wheel is a really interesting way to just wipe it out in one move, which is, you know, part of why you asked me that question. How could we fix it overnight? That's how.
Right. Let me ask you this question. How do you feel if they just said, we're just going 1 through 14, same odds?
Well, that's Michael Thompson's theory, who I do the games with, Clay's dad. Michael says 14 teams, one ping pong ball each. And again, that was proposed, and Sam Presti made the same argument I just made. He said, okay, but then explain to me how if the worst team in the league is in a small, undesirable market, like let's say the worst team in the league is in Milwaukee or Cleveland or Oklahoma City, and then they get some bad luck and they're picking 13th and 14th every year, how does that team climb out of the hole? I don't know the answer to that. So that would be the argument against it. But in the case of tanking, again, that's one move that eliminates tanking, the one team, one ping pong ball system. So that's another way you could do it.
Yeah, that's kind of my favorite way, just because I think you can get everybody on board. I feel like people get worried when they're tied for 30 years to this is their slot, although it makes a lot of
their
sense.
Fate.
Yeah, I just think that makes...
even if you think that's the case, even if all 30 teams had the exact same odds, that you knew you were going to pick in a different spot every year for 30 years, and you knew every other team had that fate, you wouldn't go for it?
I actually like it. I actually like the wheel for the most part. I just think there's a sort of angst to feeling like when a team like the Clippers, I don't think we were the worst team in the league the year we got Blake's number one pick, you know, and every now and then, you know, you get a team that jumps. There's a level of like people willing to gamble and willing to risk it. And I think you have that in a sense with some NBA GMs, and they know that they're not going to be picking 20 years from now. You know, some of these guys might not be around 5 years from now. So they want to get the best pick they possibly can now. I also wonder if it would influence GM jobs. That might be interesting. Another way to look at it, too, in getting a good GM, he's going to evaluate, well, where are you picking over the next 3 or 4 years? Oh, you're in the low, you're late, you're 30, you're 29, you're 28. However it shakes out, he's probably not.
Well, keep in mind, too. Keep in mind, Mo, you could do it so that every 3 years you were either in, like, the way I would do the wheel if it ended up happening was I'd be 0 to 10 the first year, 20 to 30 the second year, then 10 to 20 the third year, and just repeat that pattern. So in other words, you would never be 29th 1 year and 30th the next year. You would be in the top 10, followed by the bottom 10, followed by the middle, and then repeat it. So you would, it wouldn't be death. You wouldn't be death slotted, which is what I think you're trying to speak out against. So, but again, we're sitting here having this conversation. There are problems that come with either the wheel or the one ping pong ball system. I mean, it would create other problems that we'd have to solve, but that's the answer to your question. Those two ideas would end tanking right away.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I think that's the most important thing is just let's end the race to the bottom. Let's just end the
Well, you can't have you it's not good for anybody. It's not good for your paying customers, it's not good for your broadcast partners. It's not good for the fans around the league. Like tonight, I'm getting ready to do a game that the Clippers really need to win. They're a game and a half ahead of two other teams in the West for the 5th, 6th, and 7th spots. And you know, if the Clippers drop from 5th to 7th, it's the difference between having to open in San Antonio and having to open, maybe even Golden State, and having to open in Utah. Those are two very different fates. So they need to win. The Lakers absolutely need to lose. They're only a game ahead of Phoenix in the reverse standings. So, I mean, this game could be, the Clippers could be up 30 at halftime, and everybody in the building would know that's exactly what both teams wanted. That's not good for competition. It's not good for the product.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And let's shift from the tanking problem to the other problem in the NBA, which I look at the rest problem, and it's a little bit the same and not the same in the sense of it kind of just reminds me of the NFL concussion problem a little bit. Like, they got to figure a way to fix this, right? It's a huge, huge issue. This is, you know, if people haven't heard by now, it's been 2 weeks in a row, 2 Saturdays in a row. The game's been ruined by the Golden State Warriors resting. I give the Spurs a little bit of a pass because of the injuries and then the heart thing with LaMarcus Aldridge. And then the next week we had Cleveland sitting out their big three. And I have a little conspiracy behind that as well. And this is definitely out there and crazy. But I think Ty Lue, who used to be on Coach Rivers' staff, knowing how badly the Clippers needed a win, they had just lost 3 in a row. I kind of felt like he knew he was going to rest his guys one of those nights. And I think he just said, screw it, I'll just do it this night.
And I didn't even think about that. That actually is really interesting. That's a complete possibility. I never thought about that. That's actually good. But you're right. They need to get into it now. I mean, they've had two network nationally televised games basically Popoviched. And Pop started this 5 years ago. When he did it, I said, you watch. This league is derivative, and Pop's the best coach in the league. Once his tree gets out there, and other coaches, and sure enough, there's Steve Kerr in Golden State. Once his tree gets out there, you're going to see teams resting players on big nights all the time, and you can't do it. So, Mo, what I would do is I would attack it from a schedule standpoint. You've traveled in the league. You know what I go through, and you and I weren't even playing.
It's brutal.
You know, I did a back-to-back last week where we did a Sunday night game at Staples Center and then flew to Denver to play a Monday night game in Denver. By the time we got to the airport, got our plane loaded up, lost an hour because Denver's an hour ahead of us, flew to Denver. You got to drive another 40 minutes from the airport to the hotel. And by the time my head hit the pillow, it was 3:45, and we had a game that night. And all the evidence from the training staff is coming out to say, hey, you don't want to put these guys in situations where they're operating on no sleep, playing back-to-back games. It leads to injuries. So if I'm Adam Silver, I try and tackle this from a schedule standpoint. The idea I came up with the other day was the Lakers started the season this year on October 26th. I would start the season on October 6th. I would back it up 20 days. Now, in order to do that, you're going to have to give up some preseason games, but that's okay. I don't know if you know this, Mo, but they've already agreed to give up 2 preseason games next year. These teams are going from 8 to 6. So what I'm suggesting is go from 6 to 2, all right? So cut 4 more out. Nobody's going to care about preseason games being lost. It's a little bit of money in the owner's pockets, but if it fixes this bigger issue, I think they'll realize it as a net positive. So if we start the season on October 6th, the Lakers played 16 back-to-backs this year. That takes care of 10 of them. I just gave you 20 days to get rid of 10 of your back-to-backs. So you take those 10 games that, you know, take whatever 10 you want, the front of the back of your back-to-backs, move them into that 20-day period, and now we're left with 6 back-to-backs. And if you do that, then you can manage them. And I think if you only have 6, what you can do is have 2 rules. Number 1, the home team is the back-to-back team. In other words, if you're coming in to play me, if you're the Cavs and I'm the Lakers, and you're coming in to play the Lakers and the Clippers, you don't play them. You don't make the Cavs play consecutive nights. You make the Lakers play the Cavs on one night and maybe play Sacramento the next night. And all of a sudden that becomes a big issue. So now you've taken the travel out of the back-to-backs. We only have 6 of them. And then the other rule, the second rule is, if you're in a national TV game, and we know those games the day the schedule comes out. When I get a copy of the Lakers schedule, Mo, in August or September, it's got on it exactly what games are nationally televised, exactly what games are exclusive. If you're involved in a national television exclusive, it can't be one of the 6 back-to-backs. It's got to be outside of that. So you know you're going to have a full day off beforehand and a full day off after, and you can have at least the most leverage that you could have to playing your players. And I think if the league agreed to do that, they would find guys like Popovich and Ty Lue and Kerr would say, okay, they told us this months ago, this is important to the league, let's play ball here. So I would attack it from a schedule perspective.
Right. So I like the idea and I don't like it at the same time. A couple of roadblocks I see with it is, I look at the 82 as too many anyways. I think that's a high number of games. So I'm more of the camp of I want to decrease it. I think more somewhere in the range of like 66. I think with your plan, I think one thing, you know, is you're up against the World Series at that point and baseball playoffs, you know, and the NFL and college football. So at some point you're giving up some TV money in that sense, because you're not going to have as many viewers on those nights, which means the ad dollars go down. Where I think with the idea of when you decrease the number of games in the NBA season, I think you get more of, you have one of those things of like scarcity of supply. So you can kind of get a little more, you might be able to, networks could charge a little more ad dollars and make a little more on that end. The one thing I'm concerned about as well is, you know, owners kind of to make more money are also going to put that on the ticket prices, right? So the ticket prices are going to go up and it's going to be more expensive and harder to go to a game. But the one thing that I do think that's really important in all of this is, and it's in an article that I sent to you, that Baxter Holmes and Tom Haverstraw of ESPN wrote last June. And there were a couple of quotes in there that really kind of stood out to me. But, you know, guys like Dame Lillard, you know, Kobe Bryant and LeBron, it all kind of felt like their whole saying is they'd be able to play much harder if there were less games every night than if they're, you know, than being crammed in 82 games. Because we always talk about it. Like, we think LeBron's taking it a little easy and he's waiting to go into playoff mode. We think, you know, you've seen it and I've seen it where we've had teams on the road, and even if we had a day off the day before, like, we could see that there was no energy when they started the game, and we've both looked at it going like, all right, this is going to be a crappy game. I look at those things and I think, like, I really think there's somewhere in, if they just decrease the number of games, because we got to take care of our product is the players and our consumers are the fans, and we're going to see a high level, much better product of basketball on the court. Because you're also going to look at coaches could probably get a little more practice time in, and we can get guys can get a little sharper on their skills and improve in that sense. So I think there's a lot more benefits in that shortening the schedule thing. Then I think if we stretch it out, I think then it just gets too long and you begin to lose interest. That's the reason why I'm not a baseball fan. I'm not following a team for 120 games or however many games they have each year.
Well, okay, I'll address. There's no doubt that everything you said is probably true, that they could have a much better product if they cut the games to 66. The one thing, and my bosses at the Lakers are very lenient with me. They know I have a talk show. They let me say pretty much whatever I want. The one thing my boss at the Lakers tells me at the start of every year is, when you guys are talking about this subject, I'm going to do you a favor. Do not advocate at any point cutting games, because it will absolutely never happen. There is no movement in any owner's camp that would allow it to go from 82 to 66. And there's a couple of reasons for it. Number one, it would require, you just took basically a 20 to 25% pay cut. You just hacked off 16 games. Everybody would have to take a pay cut, from the players to the coaches, to the trainers, to the video guys, to the broadcasters, to the people that depend on their income at the arenas, the vendors, the parking guys. Everybody across the board. Nobody wants that. Nobody would vote to voluntarily take a pay cut. Number two, every record in the history of the NBA, and the NBA is a game of numbers, is based on 82 games. Mm-hmm. So you would be messing with the integrity of the record book. And the owners don't want to do it. You might remember, Mo, I think you were even in the league when this happened. We used to play the first round playoff series, best 3 out of 5. And they moved it to best 4 of 7 because one of the owners told me, I get $1 million every time I get a home playoff game. And so they're not going to, I think when, as soon as you say, even though all of the points you made are valid, the product would be better, the injuries would go down. It runs a tighter schedule monthly. It gives less chance for burnout. All those are valid points. It's a non-starter the minute you walk into a room of NBA owners and tell them you want to go from 82 to even 70. They don't want to do it. All like this, I just signed a 3-year contract, okay? All the salaries that I agreed to are based on me doing 90 games minimum, doing 82 regular season and 8 preseason. Now, since I signed that deal, they cut it to 6. So in preseason. So now I'm down to 88 minimum. If we adopt your theory, I'd be down to 72 minimum, you know, and it just eventually everybody would have to take pay cuts, and I don't think you can sell it. So that's why I would not agree with your plan. I just know that the owners won't do it.
Yeah, I know it's very far-fetched in the sense of it actually becoming a reality. I just think if we're going to really talk about, we want to get really serious about the rest stuff, I think it's the number of games over that period of time. I think even if you push it back 20 days, I still think you're going to have guys resting. I still think it may not be as many and may not be as often, But I think I still think you're going to have teams that are going to rest their guys, sit back. You know, if you're one of the two teams that goes to the finals and plays deep into June, you know, you're starting to get ready, you know, beginning of September, because the season's starting in the beginning of October. So you really only have 2 months off, whereas before they had close to three. I mean, and then, you know, work your way into preseason. I hate preseason games. I don't know many people who watch them. I watch them just to see the young guys and also because I'm just obsessive and I have problems in my life with basketball. And I'll watch these games, but I get it too. They're boring. They're tough to watch sometimes. So I'm not an advocate of like preseason's great and all of that, but I think it lets these guys kind of work their way into shape and things like that and kind of ease into the season. So I'm curious.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Adam Silver is the most progressive commissioner in the history of pro sports. I mean, there's no, like if he listened to this podcast, there's no idea that we've discussed or thrown out that he wouldn't at least consider. So, I mean, he would think about all this stuff, but he, at the end of the day, he worked for 30 owners. And I've been told by people who have been in the room that if your proposal contains anything less than 82 games, it never gets out of committee. It never gets out of the room.
Fair enough.
So, you know, that's the problem you face with advocating a 66-game schedule.
Okay, well, once I'm commissioner, then I'll make it happen. Until then, Adam's done a great job. He's been an awesome commissioner. You know, I'm coming for the job, though, you know, and as soon as I do, we're going to figure this out. John, just give me a second to talk about my favorite thing to talk about on these podcasts, and that's Uli's Gelateria. I don't know if you're a gelato fan or not. I'm a huge one, as my little belly is going to begin to show. It's on Spring Street in between 5th and Main. Man, I'm screwing this up pretty bad. It's on Spring Street in between 5th and 6th in the Spring Arcade. It's called Gelateria Uli's. It's a great place, really refreshing. If you're in downtown LA, I highly recommend you pop in. Sea salt caramel, speculoos cookies, and olive oil are three of my favorite flavors. They have a ton of them. I highly recommend it to anybody in downtown. John, real quick, I did want to ask you about this because you are a huge LA guy. You are LA sports. I grew up watching you on KCAL covering the Lakers, you know, and doing all the sideline reporting and everything. And you know LA sports better than most, I would say. I got to ask you, do the Clippers ever have a chance to really kind of become more than LA's basketball stepchild?
Well, they've got to win a title, and you know the concern that they have now is if I would have come to you, Mo, in 2011, and I would have said, okay, Chris Paul is going to get traded to the Lakers, but the league is going to void it, and then the Clippers are going to get him, and they're going to have Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan, and the Lakers are going to have their four worst seasons ever. They're going to be a non-playoff team, a non-factor in the NBA for 4 years in a row. And the Clippers were unable to get out of the second round in any of those years. That's the definition of a missed opportunity. And the problem is that with Doc in charge, Doc's a great coach, but he doesn't want to coach a rebuild. So he's hanging on to his guys. And look at it. Look at the way it's lining up for them this year. They could go out in the first round again. They're going to have to open up as the road team, either in Utah, in Houston, or in San Antonio. You know, that's not necessarily a series where they're going to be favored. So I think that Blake's a free agent at the end of this year. Chris is a free agent at the end of this year. JJ Redick's a free agent. I think they've got to make a decision as to whether or not they can keep going back to the same movie we've seen for 5 years and let them try it again, because Doc is not going to kneecap himself. He's not going to let Blake walk or let Chris walk as long as he's the coach. So you either got to, you know, what I've always suggested is tell Doc, pick one. Either be the GM or be the coach, but you can't do both. And then either let someone else coach the team or someone else shape the roster. And then you might move off of, because Doc's too loyal to his guys and he's not going to get rid of any of them. So unless they are willing to make some really hard changes, I'm afraid that they miss their window. Do you think anything different than that?
No, and to be honest, I don't even know if they won a championship, it really would have changed. I mean, we grew up as a Laker fan. You know the Laker history, you know, of championships and the run of it. I don't know if the Clippers could ever really be anything other than UCLA football or USC basketball, just kind of the other team in town. So I'm not sure, just because even now, I mean, there's more people talking about the Lakers on a regular basis, and they're a lottery team, than talking about the Clippers. And
well, I can take it a step further. A friend of mine's a ticket broker. He owns a place that sells secondhand tickets, and he says there has been no point in the last 4 years where Clipper tickets were worth more than Laker tickets. Even if the Clippers had, you know, Cleveland coming in or Golden State coming in, and he said you always could get more money for the Laker tickets. And it's kind of going back to what you said. The Lakers are a heritage brand. People grew up Laker fans. They consider the Lakers part of their own family, and they're not going to give up on that. What the Clippers had a chance to do was to steal all the kids, to get all the young kids growing up, and they've just been unable to do it.
I always thought the mistake the Clippers made a long time ago, and it was right around the time Staples Center opened up. If you can correct me if I'm wrong on it, but I believe they had like an offer to go join the Anaheim Ducks and go, you know, play in that stadium and have that as their own stadium. And I always thought that might have been a mistake, because then you can kind of begin to get that crowd going. And you know, do I want to go watch, you know, from Orange County, do I want to drive up through traffic to watch the Lakers, or, you know, just go down to Anaheim and watch a game? So I always thought that might have been an opportunity that was missed as well by the Clippers.
Oh, well, let me tell you how close. There's a great story behind this that I don't know if you've ever heard, how close that came to happening. Donald Sterling was the owner of the Clippers, and the Ducks and the Pond were run by a guy named Tim Ryan. Tim's still an executive down there. And so Tim was negotiating with Donald Sterling, and Sterling was very hesitant to move his team from the sports arena at the time down to the Pond. And Tim kept making him, you know, offers he couldn't refuse. Like Sterling would say, well, my friends all live in Beverly Hills. They won't be able to see my team play. And Tim would say, okay, we're going to provide for you on game nights a 20-seat helicopter that will take off from L.A., land next to the pond. We'll have limo service to and from, and your friends can, and we'll pay for it, and your friends can, it'll be a fun little helicopter ride across Los Angeles anytime they want to do it. And Sterling said, well, that's great. Okay. And he said, well, you know, I got a great deal at the sports arena. I don't pay any rent. And Tim said, okay, we'll give you the first few years rent free. We just want a long-term deal. We really want an NBA team. So he finally comes up with a deal that Donald Sterling agrees to. And Donald and Andy Roser, they sent a limousine to pick him up at the Clipper offices and drove them down to the pond. And they had all the contracts laid out on the conference table, and they had bottles of champagne on ice in the room, and Donald Sterling and Andy Roser walked in, and Sterling said, they said, Mr. Sterling, we're ready for you to sign. And Sterling said, oh, this looks great. Let me just go to the bathroom. Where is it? They said, it's down the hall on the left. And he walked out of the room, and nobody ever saw him again. He got cold feet. He walked downstairs and got back in the limo and called the whole thing off. But it was literally that close to happening, and I couldn't agree with you more. If you look at the success the Ducks have had down there, and I grew up in Orange County, Mo. My parents still live in Corona Del Mar. They will not come up to Staples Center for a Laker game, but they'll go to Anaheim, you know, any day of the week. It would have been a completely different fan base and a completely different future for the Clippers, but they just weren't going to do it. And by the way, the prologue to that story, or the epilogue to that story, is that the Sacramento Kings had the same agreement with the Pond a few years later. And they, you know, the move got voted down. If you're going to move a team out of its region, you've got to have owner FDA approval. and that move got voted down. So the pond has been very close twice. It's reached agreement with two different ownership groups to have an NBA team go in there. And both times, like, lightning struck at the last minute. But I agree with you. It would have been a really good move.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a great Sterling story. And having worked with him and having been there through the whole Sterling fiasco, I buy all of it.
Mo, I don't know how long you want me to go, but if you want me to tell more Sterling stories, that might have to be a whole nother podcast. I've got Sterling stories that could last for an hour.
That's going to be a summertime pod, John. If I can get you back, that's going to be a summertime pod where I'm just...
All right, fair enough.
Here's the mic. I'm just going to laugh in the background and let you go for an hour.
Yeah, fair enough.
Real quickly, because it would be silly if we didn't talk a little more about the Lakers, seeing that that's the team you see on a nightly basis. You know, I watch them, and they're getting better each night. You know, not each night, but there's signs of improvements in the sense of, like, Ingram's playing better each month he's improved. I saw a tweet last night from @RunTheJewels, Brian H., and you know, his field goal percentage stats from November were, you know, 34%, 34, 38, 44, and 51. And his points per game have gone up almost every month. It took a dip in December, but then it went up, you know, 9.1, 10 points a game to 12.9 right now, you know, for that month. You know, it'd be really interesting to see what's going on. Assuming they get the number one or number two pick and, you know, and they draft Ball or Fultz, is there enough room in the backcourt? Do they got to move one of these guys, you know, Russell, Clarkson, Ingram, you know, and what do you see happening in that sense?
Well, I think one of those things, the first part of your question is tied to the second part. If you assume that they keep their pick, the first, second, or third pick, then I don't think they necessarily have to move any of them. I think then you just add Lonzo to the mix. Hopefully Lonzo, or if it's Markel, or, you know, if it's, you know, the kid from Duke or the kid from Arizona, you know, it, you know, whoever they take, you just add them to the mix. But let's talk about if they lose the pick. And by the way, Mo, they only have a 54% chance of keeping it, even if they stay exactly where they are. Right now, they're the second worst team in the NBA. That only gives them a 54% chance to stay in the top three. So let's say that they don't. The other 46%, which is basically a coin flip, comes true. Now they're out of the top three. They have a first round pick, but it's Houston, so it's very late. Then I think it's highly likely someone of what we call the core four is going to have to get moved out. That'd be Russell, Randall, Clarkson, Ingram. Because I think Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson are dedicated, devoted to shaking up this roster and getting a star in here and giving the Lakers a chance. And I think that that's what that then they start making phone calls and they say, okay, we'd like to package some of our young assets to get whoever that star may be, maybe to get back into the top two of the draft, whatever they have to do to get a bigger name in here than they have on the roster now. And I think that's what they're committed to. So it all hinges on that ping pong ball lottery and whether or not they keep the pick. If they keep the pick, I think it's a different game than if they don't. I think that determines their next move, whatever that is on May, you know, 14th or whatever that day is for the ping pong ball lottery.
Yeah, especially with what you had said earlier, you know, where if they lose this pick, they lose their 2019 pick. And that is devastating, you know, for the franchise in that sense. So I definitely think this is a really important lottery. This is a real important it's going to be a huge night for the Lakers. So, Laker fans, rub your lucky charms or whatever you got. John, I appreciate all your time, man. I've taken up all of it at this point. I don't want to tie you up anymore. I know you got to get ready to call the Clipper-Laker game tonight. Congratulations on the new contract, by the way. That's awesome. Well-deserved. You are the hardest-working guy in L.A. when it comes to sports right now with the ESPN radio show and doing the play-by-play stuff. Is there anything you want to plug or anything like that before I let you go?
No, I'm good, and I appreciate you having me on. And if you want to do it, if you're up for doing it, and you want to, you know, and there's a couple other people we should get if you want to do just a Sterling Stories podcast one day. We'll do some recruiting and turn it into a gaggle. But I appreciate you having me on today.
Oh no, and just so you know, John, I have a few of my own, having been there long enough.
I would think. Yeah, I would think.
But yeah, we'll definitely do that. We'll plan on that. Hopefully in the summertime, maybe we'll get a chance and we'll recruit a few more people, and I won't stutter as much. That'd be lovely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate having me on today, Mo, and good luck with the podcast moving forward.
Thank you very much, John.
And that's it for this episode of the Jump Ball Podcast. Thank you to John Ireland for joining us today. Make sure to like us, rate us, and leave reviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and have yourselves a great day.